This is Intersection on KBIA. It's April, and that means it's time for the Unbound Book Festival, Mid-Missouri's annual gathering of writers, poets, journalists, spoken word artists. And it has to be said, some very famous authors. The festival in the past few years has brought literary celebrities like Salman Rushdie and Zadie Smith right here to Mid-Missouri. This year's keynote speaker is the celebrated George Saunders. He's the author of the Man Booker Prize-winning Lincoln and the Bardo. And many well-known and up-and-coming literary artists are gathering for this year's festival this coming weekend. And without saying another word, we need to say it's all free. The festival was created by, you might say, an out-of-place British author living here in Colombia who dreamed of this thing and made it happen. He also runs Skylark Bookshop in his spare time. Alex George is with us in studio. Welcome, Alex.
Hi, Janet. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. We just talked about you dreamed of this thing and it happened. It probably doesn't sound that simple, but how did the whole idea of Unbound come about?
So I first got the idea back in 2012, 2013, when I was on tour for one of my books. And I was invited to speak at various festivals, one in Maryland and one down in Louisiana. And I was just very impressed by the book festivals. And I thought, well, this is something that Columbia would embrace because we are a town that loves its festivals and we're a town that loves its books. You know, there are many, many very smart readers here and also many writers too. And so it just seemed like a perfect fit. Of course, there's a great deal of difference between thinking that something is a good idea and actually putting it into practice and making it happen. So it took several years. I finished the book that I was then writing and took a little bit of time off. And then I started speaking with people about it. And everyone I spoke to sort of said, no, that's a great idea. So we just began without really quite knowing what we were doing. And it took about 18 months to put it all together for the first festival that took place in 2016. And since then, we sort of have just kept going.
You do make it look easy and fun, and I'm sure it's really hard. What do people not get about putting on a festival?
Well, what people don't get is what I didn't get, which was just how much time it takes. I always say that the one thing that I had in my favor going into this was a really profound ignorance as to exactly what was involved. Because had I really understood what I was getting into, I probably would have run 100 miles in the opposite direction. So it just takes a lot of time, a lot of attention to detail. And because it's free, as you mentioned, which is a very important principle for us, it means that we spend a lot of time raising money. I always say that I spend 11 months of the year raising money and then 1 month of the year spending it, which is pretty much how it feels. So there's a lot that goes on, and it is a year-round process now. And one of the particular idiosyncrasies of a book festival is that we do need to have everybody booked way, way, way in advance, because, you know, these authors, particularly the more celebrated ones, their calendars get booked up years ahead of time. And so, for example, George Saunders, we actually booked well over a year ago. And that's now the way that we do it. We book sort of more than a year ahead of time. And so that presents its own challenges as well, for sure.
What do you hope that the community gets out of Unbound?
Oh, gosh. I hope that more than anything, the reason we do this is to celebrate books and to celebrate reading. And I hope that people who come will leave feeling inspired and energized and ready to pick up books again and to read perhaps a little bit more widely in different genres or different authors who they haven't come across before. You mentioned up-and-coming writers. We always try and get a mix of very established writers, you know, real world-class talent, but also to mix that with people who probably most readers wouldn't have heard of, and to introduce them. That's one of the real joys. It's kind of rather similar with the bookshop, is introducing people to writers who we're all very enthusiastic about, and just to present them to a wider audience.
You say on the website that you want to create great conversations, and books are such a great thing to create conversations about. And your mission in that way is really similar to KBIA's. You know, that's what we do with Intersection, is create great conversations,
right,
that are, you know, meaningful to the community and tease something out.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you feel is it happens with kind of the magic of getting all these people together with topics?
Absolutely it is. And, you know, and there are two kinds of conversations that take place. First of all, the conversations that take place between the writers. We make sure that all of the writers, we send in any one panel, we'll send everybody's books to everybody else so everybody has a chance to read the other books. So everyone comes well prepared to discuss the topic at hand. And that's one element. But the other element, which is equally important as far as I'm concerned, is the audience participation. We always make sure that at least a third of every conversation, whether every event, is Q&A, because we really do want to get the audience in dialogue with the authors. That's very important to us. I always say that you can always just open a book and read it. What a festival offers that you can't get in any other way is the ability to actually ask a question and to go behind the story and really find out more about what was going, whether it's what the genesis of the story was, or you may take issue with a particular element in a book, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. So that's very important as well. So it is creating a dialogue that ordinarily in our ordinary lives doesn't exist between the reader and the writer.
On the panel, you have set up these really interesting topics that strike me, a lot of them, as really having some momentum and urgency around them. There's mm-hmm. a panel on immigration, one on justice issues and prisons. I can't wait to hear that journalist, actually, Mother Jones journalist,
yes,
coming to talk about that one. What do you think has led to that? Why do you have this sense, what I see is kind of a sense of urgency around some of your very topical issues in the discussions this year?
Well, I think that books are by their very nature political, and putting on a book festival is, again, inherently a political act. It would have been possible to put on a festival with very anodyne programming that was didn't look up, if you like. But I think we have a responsibility to do that and to engage in the world that's going on around us. And so the programming committee felt it was very important to reflect that and to talk about some. I mean, I wish we had many more days and many more opportunities to do it. But you know, we wanted to talk about some of the things that are going on in our society, and particularly the immigration panel, for obvious reasons, about even just this week and everything that is in the news, it seemed extremely pertinent, and similarly with the prisons as well. So, you know, I think that we have a responsibility to do that and to engage in a broader dialogue.
Last year, the festival faced some controversy around diversity mm-hmm. and perspectives, and making sure all of those perspectives come out uncensored in the festival. How have you and Unbound kind of responded to that, and how are you moving forward from that?
So first of all, let me say that those criticisms were entirely justified, and we have always accepted that, and we were grateful for the dialogue that happened, because it allowed us to reconsider all of those things and hopefully to improve. So we took a number of steps to address the issues that arose. The first one of which was quite a simple one. There was some talk about the festival wasn't especially transparent, and so we just put the names of the board members up on the website. More importantly, though, we brought more people into the conversation when it came to the programming, and so we expanded the programming committee significantly. And so that was probably the most important thing that we did. We also introduced a student committee as well, who got together, and they had their own input as well. So, you know, it is important that this festival reflects the community, and the best way of doing that is to have as many people at the table as possible. So that's kind of how we've done it.
Right. Let me just say, you're listening to Intersection on KBIA. I'm Janet Saidi. I'm speaking with Alex George, who is the founder of the Unbound Book Festival happening this weekend. He's also a writer and also runs Skylark Bookshop somehow in his spare time. You can see more at KBIA.org. The festival's here. This year's highlights. What are the highlights for you?
You know, that's a question I keep being asked, and I always want to say that's a little bit like asking who your favorite child is.
I thought so as I asked it. I was like, what an impossible question.
There's so much good stuff. I mean, there are many, many interesting things. One of the panels that I'm really looking forward to is one called, which we're calling A Wonderful Town. We had the idea at some point this year that every year we would choose a city and have authors come in who have written about a particular city. And I think it's always going to be a city in the Midwest. So we began with, as you probably guessed from the title, with Chicago. And so we have three writers from Chicago who write about Chicago. We have Kevin Cavall, who is a poet, and he his book of poetry is called The People's History of Chicago. Rachel Mackay wrote a wonderful novel, which is named by the New York Times as one of their top 10 books of the year, called The Great Believers. And that book is set in Chicago. And then we have Natalie Moore, who's a journalist, an NPR journalist, in fact, who wrote a book called The South Side. Which is a nonfiction book. And it also encapsulates that panel, what we try and do with every panel if we can, which is to bring different genres together. So we have a poet, a novelist, and a journalist. Because, you know, I think that when you write in a... I think that the genre that you write in informs both the substance of what you write. And I think that, you know, a poet will be able to shed light, a different kind of light on an issue than a nonfiction writer would, and similarly with a novelist. So where we can, we try and do that and have these different kinds of writers talk about the same sort of topic.
You're speaking our language here. You know, we all love that intersection of nonfiction and journalism with literature. Mm-hmm. And it's one that goes way back in history, you know, to Dickens, Upton Sinclair, you know, sure. Journalists writing fiction and fiction writers and novelists occasionally dipping into journalism. So those sound really exciting. What else?
Yeah, so that's a good one. We've talked briefly about the immigration one already. I mean, I do think that that's going to be fascinating. One I'm particularly looking forward to, just because I love music, is one called Notes on Notes. We have four different music writers who are coming in. And that's going to be extraordinary, I think. We have Kevin Cavall again, who I just mentioned. In addition to being a poet, he's also a professor of hip hop. And so he's going to be on that panel as well, talking about hip hop. And with him, we have Joan Morgan, who actually coined the phrase hip hop feminism. So she's going to be there as well. She's just written a book on the 20th anniversary of The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, all about that sort of seminal album. So that's going to be great.
I can't wait to hear this. Can I just say I had that album on a cassette tape in my car in the 90s. It was just like playing over and over. So right. I really look forward to hearing that.
Yeah, well, I still listen to it when I run. It's on one of my playlists. And then we have Wesley Brown, who's a fiction writer, and he's written a wonderful book of short stories called Dance of the Infidels, which is all about jazz figures, mainly in the 30s and 40s. And that's going to be great. And then the final person on that panel is Donna Gaines, who has written a book called Why the Ramones Matter, which I'm really looking forward to, because the Ramones featured very heavily in my last novel, and I love them. And so we have rock and roll, we have jazz, we have hip hop. It's going to be a really, really interesting discussion. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, I love this idea of the sense of place. Tell me more about that. Why do you want to feature a town with novelists and towns? And it's kind of interesting to ask you as well, Alex, because I referred to you as out of place. I was hoping you wouldn't be offended. I'm sure you feel very at home here. My husband's British, and I refer to him as out of place as well. But, you know, place is so important in your writing, and it is important in your writing mm-hmm. as well. So why are you attracted to that topic, and what does it mean for a writer?
Well, I think that, it varies, of course, on the kind of writing that you're doing. But whether it's poetry or fiction or nonfiction, I mean, every story has to happen somewhere. And I've certainly, in terms of what I have written, always try and make the location a character in and of itself. You know, I've just been writing the author's note for my new book. And the first sentence in it says something like, one of the great things about writing fiction is all the travel that you do. And it's not the travel that you actually do. It's the journeys that you go on in your head. And so I do think it's very important, and it informs everything. So from that point of view, it was a logical decision to say, well, we're gonna really do that in a very sort of clear and express way by selecting a town, and so we'll see how it goes.
Do you know what next year's town is?
No.
All right. So no, open to suggestions.
Open to suggestions. We haven't decided yet.
Okay, that'll be interesting. I look forward to seeing that. So you said you like place to be a character in your work. How does Missouri come into your work?
Well, the novel before that, my last one, A Good American, was set in Missouri, and it made sense to do that because I wanted to write a book about immigration and about America, and since I'm an immigrant and have come to America and I'm living here, it would have been a little peculiar to have written about anywhere else. So that was why. But I wanted to write about rural Missouri rather than the big cities. So one of the things I always try and do is to slightly sort of defy expectations a tiny bit. So that was one of the reasons why I set that story in a little town rather than in a city. And similarly with the book that I've just finished that's going to be published next year, it's set in Paris in 1927, but you don't see many of the big tourist attractions. When people think of Paris, they think of the Eiffel Tower, and they might think of the Louvre and all of these places. And
Shakespeare's Boat Company.
So those places aren't there. It's more the small streets and parks where real people live their lives. So, you know, I'm always trying to subvert expectations a tiny bit when it comes to that kind of thing.
Intersection on KBIA, we're talking with Alex George. He runs Skylark Bookshop, he's an author, and most importantly, this weekend, he's hosting the Unbound Book Festival, featuring loads of up-and-coming, as well as some celebrity artists and writers, and it's all free, happening this weekend, and we're talking here on Intersection. I'm Janet Saidi. Thank you for listening. You can see more on this conversation at kbia.org. Missouri and your writing. So just a question for you, which I'm just curious about. I know you're a fan of the book Stoner. You recommended it to me in your shop. I bought it and read it.
Uh-huh.
It's I guess what people would call it, a quiet novel, but also a sort of novel of ideas in a sense, but it's just beautifully written by John Williams.
Yes.
So there's Stoner. There's also Tennessee Williams, who famously attended and flunked out of the University of Missouri. There's T.S. Eliot in Missouri. There's Laura Ingalls Wilder. Mm-hmm. Even Maya Angelou has some Missouri history. What do you think of Missouri as a literary place?
Well, I mean, I think that, obviously that history is storied and probably not celebrated enough. There are certain states that you could go to where... you know, you can't turn a corner without being told about who used to sit in that bar and write their work. And
it's true. That's an American thing, though, not so much in London.
Oh, well, London.
Yes,
London's,
I know what name you're thinking of. I grew up in Hannibal, Missouri.
Okay.
So, yes.
And
I'm okay with a little bit of eyebrow raising at the Mark Twain dinette and so forth.
Londoners do it too. We have our blue plaques on the walls that say...
They're so subtle.
Somebody did this and somebody lived here.
I've stumbled on like George Eliot. Henry James lived here.
Yeah.
I visited a friend once in London who said Sylvia... You know, oh, there was a plaque. Sylvia Plath mm-hmm. lived here.
Well, and occasionally, though, they're really pushing it. And you think, there's one somewhere that says, Jimi Hendrix once spent the night or something. Wow. So I think that, yes, historically, I mean, all of those, you know, Missouri has as rich a history as any state when it comes to those kinds of people. Eliot and Twain and all of them. What's more interesting to me, though, is what's going on now. And one of the most extraordinary things about Colombia in particular that I had no idea about when I arrived here was just how many authors live and work here. Mm. And they're not all connected with the university by any stretch of the imagination, but there are many, many published authors who work here, an extraordinary number of poets, and who are also published. But also, you know, we put on events at the bookstore for local authors, and they always, and people sign up for them, and they always go immediately. And there is such an extraordinarily vibrant community of writers in this town, whether it's the events that we do at Skylark or the One Mic thing that happens every month, which is always absolutely packed to the rafters. There are readings at Yellow Dog Bookstore. There's a two monthly authors talk series that go on Saturday mornings. And all manner of things. And there really is, it's extraordinary just how many things that there are. And we were just having a discussion about it yesterday. Somebody was in the shop and was about to go to One Mic and then had another plan. And there's just always things to do. That it's a wonderful community. And it's a very supportive community as well. We all sort of know each other. And that to me is a really a kind of a miracle in a town like this.
That's great. Do you feel at home here?
Oh, yes, very much so. Yeah.
What made you want to be a writer? Because you are, what we haven't said is that you're an attorney as well.
Yes.
Do you still consider this your day job?
We're doing the law.
Is it much less so?
It's less than it used to be. And right now it's almost non-existent.
Okay.
But because the festival is entirely volunteer run, you know, we have no staff, and so the couple of months in the run up to the festival, I basically closed my law firm down because there literally aren't enough hours in the day to do everything. And now I've forgotten the question. What was
Well, I was just noticing you've booked yourself out of tax season successfully.
I just wrote to my accountant this morning saying I don't know what fool thought it was a good idea to have a book festival in the same week as tax day. So that was not especially good planning on my part.
But my question was, what made you want to be a writer?
Oh, right. I wish I could tell you that I've walked around with a notebook from the age of six making notes on the human condition, but unfortunately that would be a big fat lie. I've always been a big reader. I've always loved to read. And when I was a young attorney in London in the early 90s, I went through a period of just reading a lot of really terrible books. And I would say to people, these are dreadful. And then I would say, I'm sure I could do better than this. And so perhaps inevitably, at some point, someone suggested that I should sort of put my money where my mouth is and try. And so I did. And this was in the days when people didn't have computers at home. So I went and bought this computer that came in four enormous boxes with this great big whirring thing every time you turned it on. It would take 15 minutes to switch on. And started to write without any real expectation that anything would come of it. And so 7 books later, I mean, there's nobody more surprised than I am to find myself here. So I was very lucky in that I found an agent quickly, and my very first book, which is back in 1999, got published, and it's just been all go from there.
When you say you weren't enjoying some of the reading that you were doing, I've heard you mention this before, and I've actually wondered what you meant a couple of times. And I wondered if you meant that there was a sort of literary sort of writing that seemed to be writing for other writers? Or am I totally off base with that? What were you not loving, and what did you think needed to be that you would contribute to the literary world?
I don't remember what it was about the books.
You just thought they were bad.
I just didn't enjoy them very much. I mean, it was a very long time ago in my defense. I don't know. They probably, we all read books that we don't love. And, whether there's a plot twist that irritates you or the writing is just insufferable, I don't know. I honestly don't remember what it was. As for what I can contribute, I wouldn't presume to suggest I could do anything. I mean, I've got away with it so far, and people have been kind enough to buy the books and read them. But I mean, I'm not doing anything special. I'm just telling some stories.
What is your favorite thing about being a writer?
Oh, golly. It's telling the stories, and it's the moments that nobody ever sees. The most satisfying part of it all is in the craft and the effort and the sense of having created something out of nothing, and having created a story and characters which hopefully readers will engage with. There's that very famous saying by E.M. Forster, only connect. And that's really what writers do when they tell their stories, whether it's fiction or non-fiction or poetry. They're trying to reach out and touch somebody, touch their reader. And when you work very hard at something and you think that you maybe are going to be able to do that, that's very satisfying. And then, you know, in the days of the internet, we're lucky in that it's very easy for readers to reach out to writers. And, you know, just every so often I'll get an email or a letter from somebody telling me how much they enjoyed the book and how much it meant to them. And those are moments that just go unnoticed, but they mean a huge amount, because that's really why we all tell our stories.
You've been listening to Intersection on KBIA. We have been talking with writer and Unbound Book Festival founder Alex George. He also runs Skylark Bookshop downtown in Columbia. Unbound Festival happens this weekend with panel discussions and events all day Saturday on the campus of Stevens College. And things really start also on Friday and as early as Thursday. We've got Poetry Abound, hosted by Takiya Thomas, at Cafe Berlin at 4:30 on Friday, just before another kickoff event with the celebrity author George Saunders at the Missouri Theater. You can see more info on this conversation and about Unbound at kbia.org. Remember, all of it is free. I'm Janet Saidi. Thank you for listening. Let's go shoot them in the back now. What they want.